Okay, good morning. Like Cheryl said, I'm Patrick Haslam. I'm from Los Indios, Texas. That's approximately 20 miles from the Brownsville area of Texas, deep in the south. Basically, what I want to talk to you today about is digital archiving. This has become a major issue with USDA APHIS, as Joe and everybody here has mentioned today. This is the future of what we are doing, and it's extremely important to us as identifiers to be able to get our images around for others to see so that we can move cargo faster and more efficiently. So what I want to talk about now, this is an image of our equipment. I don't know if anybody had showed you this yet, but this is what we use, and it consists of extremely expensive equipment that is provided to each identifier through the APHIS by the Remote Pest Identification Program, the RPIP, as Joe had mentioned earlier. Joel Aronoff, which is an absolute fantastic person, has made this possible, and if we have problems with it, he gets stuff done for us immediately, and so it's extremely efficient. But this is a Nikon SMZ 1500 scope. This thing is absolutely awesome. It has two interchangeable lenses that we can use, 1x and 0.5x. The binocular scope, which is different on some identifiers than others. This is a Nikon camera, which is hooked to this screen here where we take the images. This is the compound scope, as many of you notice, which also has the camera port there. And some of the little toys and equipment that we use, like a cup for filtering light and such. But this is basically, if you go to any identifier site, this is what you can expect to see. And I'm lucky I have a ring light and post lights, which probably a lot of you have as well. Okay, so the equipment, as I'd mentioned, organized by RPIP, Joel Aronoff in Washington. It's given to every identifier around the country, or that's what they're aiming to do. All 84 of us, I think they had mentioned, all have the capability to transmit images to Washington or whoever specialist we send them to. And then we also have the capability to alter the images if need be, or shrink them, or whatever needs to be done to the images. Okay, instead of using auto montage, which a lot of you are used to, we use Helicon Focus. And that just stacks the images. We take a group of shots starting from the top and gradually move to the bottom. And it compiles them together so that the entire image of the insect is in focus. And I'm sure a lot of you have done this at your locations as well. For the image editing software use, we use Photoshop Elements. And as simple as it is, at my port of entry, we use Microsoft Office Picture Manager, because we don't alter a lot of these images. We'll just shrink them down so that we can send them to the specialist for identification. What it looks like then is, after you take the group of images and load them up through Helicon, you can see there are all the files there. It just stacks them. And this is, you know, one image in that view there. But in the end, this is what it should look like, where it has focus from top here all the way to the bottom with the tarsal claws, the antenna. This is a Eudia gogus, an antimonae that I collected around my house. A beautiful insect nonetheless. Okay, Joe had already touched on this, but I'll just give you a quick understanding of what happens. When an insect comes to a port of entry and it's collected by customs here, and I know this is small for you, those of you in the back, usually they accompany it with a form, which I'll show you in a moment, which is sent to an area identifier, us. We either make the identification locally and determine the action, or we will send it up, which what happens if we make the identification, we send the information back to customs by fax, most likely. If we don't know what it is, we'll send it via photographs accompanying the form digitally up to Washington or Beltsville or Philadelphia, wherever it needs to go to the specialist, who then make their determination, who sends it to NIS, puts the action status on it, which sends, you know, they do a pest risk analysis, sends the information back to us, and we fax it back to the port of entry. Pretty complicated, but pretty smooth after you get used to the process, and we do it very quickly. Okay, basically this is just an image of the CBP identifier. This is Cichia medulli, or chayote, This is a spiny form of it. You wouldn't want to grab those with your bare hands. They do poke you. This is solid wood packing material that they're taking insects out of here at the port of entry. And this is opuntia, or cactus, which a lot of you may have seen in your stores. It's consumed by a lot of folks on the southern border. This is the pads themselves, and this is the fruits. And that's a lot of times, as you've seen, what occurs at a port of entry, where they will find the insects. When they do find one, this is a generalized form, but this is an APHIS 309 form. This is what comes to us accompanying the insect. And it just has basic information on there, including the name of the insect, the commodity name, how much weight that they have, and the identifiers, and the urgent status, as Joe had mentioned before. But it's just a bunch of information that the government collects about each insect. So where I'm going with this is, what is the role with our imaging in this process? And basically, we need to transfer the images to other identifiers. If they need it, we have it a lot of times, and we can share that with them. It goes up to either Washington or Beltsville or wherever it needs to go as images, in case they need to see it as an urgent to get the status back to us. And then also, this acts as virtual insect collections. As all of you know, a picture is worth a thousand words. And we are working our best to develop this collection of images so that we can share them with others. I will show you examples of this where we've lost the insect because it was kept by Washington where they needed it for their collection, but in the same sense, we didn't lose it because we have the images of that insect. And so, and then as well as we digitalize insect keys, making it easier for those folks that aren't specializing in something, and we show critical morphological differences that I will show you in a moment. This insect here, a weevil, a Baradina, as you can see from the triangular plates there, was intercepted on a nona, which is soursop, which is actually prohibited in the country, so it shouldn't have even been here. They smuggled it in. They found this insect, and we photographed it, and it was actually kept by the National Collection. And so we lost it, but at the same time, we have it. A beautiful weevil nonetheless, but if it comes around again, we will know what this one is, this Optatus. Many of you know this key already by Arnett. I call it the Beetle Bible. This is basically what we use as our fundamental keys that we need to identify insects with. And there are other more developed keys, but this is what we have as our basic tool. What I'd like to show you, this couplet here for Diabrotica, Chrysomelidae, we've digitalized this using our images. And so what we've done here is we've shown, you know, here's the basic key itself. We just put labels on the images showing, so what you can see is what exactly is in the key, and along with the depressions that you find in the pronotum, etc., the little plique in the wings and such. But that's another exceptional use that we do, and we share these keys. They're all digital, obviously, so they go between ports of entry, and we can share them with all identifiers. This is another one, Pseudopachy brachius basalis, coming again on opuntia or cactus. This use here is, we can directly show labeling of, you know, the double pronotum, where you have two lobes separate, and then the double row of spines on the four femora. You know, these are labels that we can put on these things and send to others so that they get an immediate identification of the insect if they see those characters. This, coming again out of Arnett's key, the couplet, we can, you know, show deciphering keys between Lanogyraeus, which has a starburst pattern, versus the straight rearward pointing setae, along with that fold. And that's important. That's a very quick reminder to us ourselves as identifiers what will distinguish the two species, or genus rather. This, we also use handheld cameras for our digital imaging, and this is to show that, because this Ortholacus was so large that it couldn't fit under the Nikon scope, so we just took a quick image using the handheld camera. Stuck it there to show the size, you know, approximately 4 millimeters and some forceps. This buck here I wanted to show you, this is a Brentidae. This guy came over, and I'll tell you a funny story about him. He was almost thrown away by the other identifier with me. He saw it and thought it was junk on the scope. It's very pretty when you look at it, but notice the ornate antenna in the eyes here and the long snout, making it a Brentidae. But this is an interesting one that came on papayas, and so this insect was sent up, these exact images, to Washington, and they were able to get the identification back to us immediately because they knew what it was. And so, again, you know, these basic images showing the tarsal claws, the ventral, lateral, dorsal shots, and also the size comparison, this is what they need, and they were able to give us, you know, a species-level ID immediately based upon our images that we took. What we do here, this is a collection in PowerPoint. This is how we keep our digital collections. We try to shrink the images down, and you just go through slide by slide or looking at them as an overview, as I have here. And that makes it easy because, you know, as the other identifier with me calls it, the Sesame Street game, which one looks not like the other? And that's a quick way to get an identification. And for those of us that are not specialists around in all areas of insects, this really helps. This is one that is waiting to be determined that we had sent up from a specialist, or to a specialist, that it's called Gynandrobrotica lepida. And so we just need the confirmation for it, but we have this record that we can track, and when they do make the final identification on it, we will have that and update our system, which we can check regularly. But this is another beautiful Gallerucinae that we get that is actionable down on the border of Mexico. Again, the other views, you know, the frond shot with the antennal calli and such, and the lateral and the size shot that we get. This is a Proconianae that we don't know the exact name of yet, and we will get it soon from Cell when they do identify it. But this is another beautiful specimen, and so just another example of what we're waiting for. And we keep the tracking number on the top so that we will know what happens to it and where it is in its process of being identified. And the mealybugs, we can't forget about them. We keep collections of mealybugs as well using the other compound scope, that Nikon scope that we have there. And we just take different images showing the different shots and important aspects of the mealybugs. Again, collected, you know, just and used with basic equipment, you know, Microsoft PowerPoint, which everybody has in their computer. We use, you know, very rudimentary tools that we are given for this process. For this one, Planococcus citri, you know, just an easy image showing all 18 serrari that we are supposed to count, and the 18 pairs that we can have, very quick, you know, to indicate what we should be seeing. The transparent pores in the tibia and the coxae, you know, another thing, and showing the tubular ducts. That's another important aspect that we normally see. And then, obviously, the multilocular double or nearly double rows of multilocular pores that you'd see. Mealybugs are important, and we get a lot of them through our port. So what does this convey then? As Joe had mentioned to you folks earlier, these images are not available to the public, but they are available to APHIS nationwide, and we put them on something called a SharePoint website, which is accessible all over the country. Everybody has access to this, and it's just a collage of images put together. And any identifier can upload those. They can share them quickly, or they're shared all the time. It's readily available for identifiers. And I wanted to show these were taken by Tad Dobbs of Miami, Florida. This is an example of what you would see. Just quick images, you know, and they have the species and genus name on there. And so they can be downloaded by identifiers in case we need to gain access to these. And so in looking forward then, digital archiving is, you know, this is the future of APHIS. This is how we are going to be productive and make specialists out of just general identifiers. And it's becoming a key for, you know, protecting agriculture that all of us consume here. It will be, you know, extremely and becoming more important in the future. And it's just prominent among entomology. So are there any questions?
Many land-grant universities have plant clinics or insect clinics. Can they get into your SharePoint image system and use it?
Not at this time, they can't. That is a government-only based system because it has to do with intranet and such. I don't know. I guess I'll point that to Joe, who is head of NIS, who can give you more information on that.
One of our initiatives that we would love to do is to make that kind of thing available. We don't even have it organized for ourselves as yet. This is one of the things that gives me headaches at night because it's one of those priorities that I know is important, but it always gets pushed down another notch when we want to get around to it. We've made some efforts in that direction, and we're making one again now. So I hope to be able someday to say to you, yes, you know, we've got this and we're putting it out there for the world to use.
One step forward would be to make a DVD and give us a static copy.
Somebody has to make it relevant though. You know, it has data associated with it, and that's what you do. You know, that's separate at this point in time than just that tracking number that you saw. But yeah, I hear you, and I agree with you. I just think that PowerPoint, I'm not thinking of entering the system for my own. Just the library itself, we might be able to do that more simply, but we have to organize it and figure out what are we going to put out there too. Well, someday for sure.
Question back here.
Do you ever include a lot of the host plant information or the collection information where you got it, from what location did the shipment arrive?
Yes, we do. What we normally do, as I could probably go back and show you, but it's hard. We try to put the main host that will intercept the pest off of, but then once it branches out, using that pest ID system that they have available at NIS, we can query for the host, which is more thorough than just putting it on there, because that changes, it's very fluent, it changes regularly. And so as those additional hosts become available and we are knowledgeable about those, we will put those on there. But it really helps having, because the hosts are very important for pests.
Oh, just something about your camera system. What's the resolution of the image when you initially take that?
It ranges because depending on the size of the insect, obviously the focal magnification. The Eudiagogus that I showed you that intimidated was probably around 30 power maybe at first, but it does change. Obviously that Orthalcus, the snail that I showed you, had to be done by the hand camera because it's just so large it won't fit underneath the scope. But that equipment is fantastic. That's the most amazing stuff I've ever seen.
I was going to push it, right, it's not that. Usually the images that come out when I have it on maximum resolution are somewhere around like 2400 pixels by 1800, something like that.
We have to shrink it, otherwise right. If we send it via email with that, we'll crash the computer it's going to, if they're so large.
What's the image size? A picture like that, they usually start. On the order of, it comes out as a JPEG in the system, so it's already compressed.
Cool.
And it's usually around like 5 to 8 megabytes, something like that.
There were a couple more questions back here. You in the far back, the gentleman, you right there, middle back, excuse me.
Does your database have photos of eggs, larvae, hens as well?
We try to. Sometimes it's extremely hard to photograph those, especially lepidoptera, because you need to photograph them outside of alcohol. And as you pull them out, they'll start shrinking right away, like a raisin, basically. And so what we try to do is just snap a couple quick shots. Or, for example, a Nidadulidae larvae, we'll photograph those the same way. And we do our best to get the photograph done before the actual specimen shrinks. But they're more limited than a hard-bodied insect, nonetheless.
One more.
How often do you dissect?
We'll do that often, especially with some of the snails that leave the mollusks. That's becoming more important to dissect or to decipher the species. And so, yeah, we will definitely do that. That's done in alcohol more because we can get a clear shot of it rather than the entire body of the insect. But yeah, that's becoming more prominent, especially with genitalia, Bruchidae and such, to get the species names correct.
Anyone else? All right.